And thanks for joining us now on KVCR for KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. So I'm David Fleming, welcoming Colin Mockrey. And so, Colin, first of all, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
The brand new two-person show, Asking for Trouble, with you and Brad Sherwood. This will be at Agua Caliente, June 22nd, and we'll hear about that in a bit, but while many know you from Whose Line Is It Anyway, of course, or at least the random reels floating across Facebook feeds, I'd like to get some of your background before Whose Line Is It Anyway. So you ended up getting the theater bug, I think I read in secondary school or high school, perhaps. It was at college, though, at Studio 58 Theater School, when you discovered improv or improvisational comedy. Was it an actual improv class or maybe part of a movement for the actor exercise in which you started doing some improv kind of thing?
It was a demonstration. I went to an evening. Part of it, a friend was at a play reading, so I went to support him. And part of the evening was this new thing called theater sports, which had been conceived by an Englishman, Keith Johnstone, while he was teaching at Calgary. And it was improv in a sports setting. There were two teams. There's a referee who would issue challenges. Each team would do the challenge, and then it would be judged by three judges. And it just seemed like it would be a lot of fun. I loved the fact that these people would get something from us, the audience, and then create this magical scene. Shortly after that, they started a theater sports league in Vancouver, and I got involved. And that was the beginning of my long journey into improv, never thinking, oh, this is going to be a job. I just thought this is something fun to do with my friends on weekends.
Oh, absolutely. It's been, for me, just really a fun exercise more often than, I mean, if I'm going to do something in the world of improv, it's usually an exercise for a warm-up sometimes even. I can't imagine even making a career out of it or being in the position of thinking this could possibly be a career. While you're with the Vancouver Theatre Sports League, I think this was part of it. It's a quote out there somewhere that has you, quote, literally had to pull people out of McDonald's to come see the shows. Is this the Vancouver Theater Sports League, or is that something totally out of context?
Yeah. No, the theater that we performed at, a theater owner very generously said, you know what, after our main stage show, you can have the stage to do your improv stuff. And at that point, no one really knew what improv was. So you'd go into McDonald's and say, hey, come see our show. And they would say, what is it about? We go, we don't know. You have to yell things out. And then within the year, it was the big cult thing in Vancouver. And from that, we started doing improvised productions. And it's still running strong today.
Oh, wow. That is totally cool. Well, you know, the way that was written, it sounded like things were so desperate that you had to find audience members. But this is more like you're pushing a new form and letting people know about it.
Yeah, at that point, I think the only person sort of known for improv, even though I don't think it was even called that, was Jonathan Winters, who would show up on talk shows most of the time. I think he had a summer series for a little while. But aside from that, and then until Robin Williams, nobody really had a grip of what improv was.
I think you and I left Vancouver about the same time, except that while I was on an aircraft carrier headed for San Diego, you, on the other hand, were on your way to Toronto for an audition with Second City. I would really just love to know what the audition process is like for Second City, what you had to do, what you had to prepare for, and then what you found, even.
This was actually my second audition. When I was in Vancouver, Expo 86 happened, and Second City wanted to have a company there for the exposition. I auditioned with Ryan and another friend. The other friend and Ryan got it. I didn't. And the three people who auditioned me are now really close friends, so I always bring it up. How it took me a little while to get involved with Second City. So Ryan was at Expo, and because they liked him, and, you know, he's fairly good, they decided to bring him back to Toronto, put him on the main stage there. And I'd moved out, I guess, a couple of months later, and he called me up and said, hey, they're having auditions for the touring company. You should try out. I told him about you. I went, and the audition, you start off with like 30 people. Then you do various scenes, various games, and then they whittle it down till it was four of us. And then we had the final audition, and then the director came up and said, it was between you and the cute guy, and you got it. And I said, oh, thank you. Then I married her. So that all worked out. That audition really worked well for me.
Yeah, you were auditioning for several things at that point. Somewhere you had a bit, I feel like it was with Second City, but you had written a bit, it was a 5-minute James Bond movie.
That was Second City. I love doing physical comedy. So I thought, is there a way we could do like a 5-minute James Bond with all the death-defying, you know, as death-defying as we could make it on a small stage with 6 people? So, yeah, there was a chase down a mountain. There was some parachuting. There's a jet ski race. So Second City was comedy college for me in a way. It was great because I got to work with different people with different points of view. Every night we got to improvise because after the main show, we would do improv sets to find ideas for our next show. So it was great trying to figure out how can we break the stage up so it doesn't become limiting. It becomes everything we wanted to be, from a space station to a 5-minute James Bond movie. So I really learned a lot in the 3 years I was there.
We think of Saturday Night Live, and so many of those folks came through Second City, several generations of them, as a matter of fact, or other comedy shows or comedians that we know of these days. Look just a little bit into the background, you hear of either, I guess, the Groundlings or Second City. These are the things that keep on coming up, it seems. And you're not the first to have referred to Second City as sort of a college for comedy. It's really cool to hear. In 89, you then auditioned for what was new at the time, the British Channel 4 improv show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? But you didn't make the cut on this one either, is that right?
Yeah, I make horrible first impressions, apparently. I take a while. Yeah, they had come to see it. They saw the show with the James Bond movie, and it was a great scene, but it was a really good show. And they really liked the cast, so they asked us to audition the next day. They were leaving in the morning, so our audition was 8 in the morning, which for Second City, well, for any time, really, not the best time for comedy, but also Second City, you know, after you do the show, you hang out on stage, you hang out with everyone, you sort of decompress. Yeah. So we auditioned as a cast, and because we were a cast, we did that thing you do. Everybody was really supportive, so nobody stood out. So none of us got cast. And it wasn't until the next year, my wife Deb and her writing partner had gotten a pilot going. It was being turned into a series, and it was down in Los Angeles when they came through again. And I auditioned with people I didn't know. So it was like, hey, screw you, look at me. Which, you know, it's an important lesson for the kids out there. Always look after yourself.
That's right. There is actually a quote of yours that I did want to ask you about, and that basically just covered the second half of it, and that is that auditions should be about making yourself stand out. But the really rather deep, I feel, the other part of that statement was that you stated that improv is about setting other people up to be funny. Mm-hmm. I just found that incredible.
Ryan Stiles was a stand-up, and usually stand-ups, they can do well with improv, and this is a gross generalization, you know, if they're riffing with the audience. But what I loved and what I learned quickly from Ryan was he got as much pleasure setting you up for a joke and you getting the joke he would have made if he got that set up. He took a lot of pleasure in that, and I realized, yeah, this is really an ensemble art, and there is as much, you know, everybody's working towards the same goal, a good scene, a funny scene, and it is just important to get that set up. It's the hardest thing when you're teaching improv to get people to sort of give over their ego and work as a group. It's basically the easiest thing in the world to do. It just goes against everything we do as human beings. You just have to listen to people and accept their ideas. That's how you improvise. And when you're teaching, it's amazing how everyone's go-to is to say no to any idea. And you learn quickly, that just immediately stops scenes. And you learn, I have a great idea, but if my partner gets their idea out first, bye-bye, good idea. Mm-hmm. I'm here to support this idea now. So it really is, again, a great thing to learn, not only if you're going to make this a career, but improv is such a great skill. And I always encourage people to take it. It helps you feel confident talking to people. It helps you walking into situations without any prejudgment and actually just living in the moment. It really is a good skill to have.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking as a recovering theater geek myself, in that it helped in whether it was some sort of exercise or a demonstration for people, or whether it was, you know, anything goes all the way to David Mamet, it prepares you for the unpredictable nature of live theater and the adaptability you have to have. And so this is more than just a comedy bit. It really is a good tool to work with. And I'm glad you pointed out also how it applies to everyday life as well, this improvisational nature.
Oh, absolutely. When you say yes to things, it takes you to places even within theater, I was asked a couple of years back to do a production of King Lear, where I would play the fool. Okay. And it was me and the top Shakespearean actors in Canada who work at Stratford constantly. And I was a big fan of all of them because my wife and I go to Stratford every year to catch whatever shows they're doing. And in previous years, I probably would have gone, oh, I don't know. But Deb and I had actually made a concerted effort. Hey, why don't we use the rules of improv in our life and actually say yes to things that may be a little outside of their comfort zone?
Ooh.
So I said yes to this and did King Lear. And it was a great experience. Now, I don't think Olivier has anything to worry about. I think his legacy is safe. But for me, it was, again, a great learning experience. I worked with great people, and to see the different work ethics of someone in theater, someone doing Shakespeare, as opposed to, you know, what we do in improv, which is basically have a coffee and then walk on stage.
That's my warm-up exercise. It's a microwave. So whose line is it anyway? Just Wrapped. Tell me about the final show, or maybe even the shows leading up to the final. Were they different as we approached the end of it all, this nearly two decades?
Yeah, not really. I mean, everyone is so close. It's a great cast. I think part of the reason everyone still gets along so well is the taping was two weekends out of the year.
Mm.
So it was like 6 days where we started to get together to kind of goof around, and that was it. So there wasn't really anything different. Nobody was really actually sure if it was the end. I think at the beginning said, oh, this is the last season. So it was just kind of, oh. And then our last show, it was just a regular show. Everybody made little speeches and we had a little party and it was great. And then a couple of months ago, I got an email saying, oh, we have a lot of extra material left from the taping, so there's going to be another season. You just don't have to film anything. I thought, man, I wish I could get more work like that.
Yeah.
It's already done. So I never say never with this show. I mean, I thought after the Drew era, I thought, well, kind of it. And it was actually the internet, I think, that brought us back. Because Brad Sherwood and I have been touring, of course, for this is our 22nd year. And we found our audiences were getting younger, which really doesn't happen. And it was because these kids were catching up with the show on YouTube. And so we got this sort of second wave of audience members. So as long as generations keep turning and my hips hang out, we can go forever.
Tell me about a time or times one of the other folks on Whose Line Is It Anyway cracked you up so hard you couldn't continue.
I don't think it's ever happened to me.
Really?
I'm very professional.
Oh,
David.
Stone cold. Are,
you've seen them. The one time I broke up totally, no idea what to do, there's a scene we do called Secret. There's a trunk on the stage. I think this one was, we were Peter Pan and Wendy or something. And then one of us has a secret, and then we open up the trunk, and then that secret is revealed. And when I opened up the trunk, it was a picture of me. The body obviously had been replaced by a bodybuilder, but it just so took me by surprise, I was kind of useless for the next couple of minutes.
Okay, that answers another one, too. If anybody ever tried to do something to another cast member, try to crack them up on purpose, I'm sure that happens. But as you mentioned, though, it's really setting up. You want to be the guy that says, I just learned from Pittsburgh, and count on Wayne Brady to say, and boy, are my arms tired. That kind of a thing. Back now with KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Colin Mockrey about his background in improvisational comedy, as well as his upcoming appearance at Agua Caliente, along with Brad Sherwood, with a brand new show. More at aguacalientecasinos.com, as well as colinandbradshow.com. Before we go to Asking for Trouble, I just read about this, so I haven't been able to check it out, that you and Brad Sherwood had the honor of headlining at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And so, one, how did that happen? They got Stephen Colbert a bunch of years ago, and that was pretty much not realizing who he actually was and what he actually did when they brought him in. And I'd also love to hear if it was a scripted stand-up act, since it was this type of setting, or did you, at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, go with, okay, improv suggestions from the audience, you?
We were the year after Colbert, because I think they thought, you know what, let's go someplace a little safer. So something less controversial. So they contacted us and said, yeah, so if you could do like 3 improv games. We said, sure. I mean, the whole thing was incredibly surreal. You know, before our show, there was a dinner. We met the president and Mrs. Bush, and, you know, everyone was lovely. And we were sitting maybe about 40 feet away from the president. And he starts with a stand-up act. And he was killing. I turned to Brad and said, wow, his timing is amazing. I mean, he had a lot to work with. His vice president shot someone in the face. So, you know, he had a lot of good material. So we do our stuff. We had Brian Williams, who did the sound effects with us. And then we were going to end with a rap. And I watched Brad going over to Karl Rove. What's this about? Well, and then he brought Karl Rove up. And so we improvised a rap with Karl Rove.
Oh, my God.
The next day, we got a call from his office saying, you know, Mr. Rove had so much fun, he'd like to invite you over to the White House and have a bit of a tour. So we go, all right. So our wives, very excited. So we all go over there. And as we're walking around, my wife grabs my arm and goes, my God, this is the West Wing, because she was a big fan of the show. She was like, we go into the Oval Office, and President Bush was there. And he talked to us for like half an hour. One very odd thing was he said, you know, I was a little nervous about doing a stand-up in front of you, but Colin, when you said I had good timing, that sort of gave me some confidence. I thought, I was like 40 feet away from him. How? He goes, I'm an expert lip reader. So immediately I started replaying everything else I'd been saying very quickly. And it was fun. I mean, he was not my president, being Canadian, and also I'm liberal, so not part of my client, but I have to say he was very funny. He was self-deprecating. He was generous to all of us. Sometimes it's just kind of nice to see the man behind the office, which was interesting. I mean, I have pictures, and it still, that just seems like something that I made up. I thought, wow, this part of him really should be amplified because he's incredibly charming. He was very funny. Nowadays, before our show, we said we're not going to do anything political, so we're not making any political stuff at all.
Good.
It's weird how it just immediately divides the audience.
Oh, yeah. Too divisive. Okay, let's go now to Asking for Trouble. This is, again, coming to Agua Caliente, June 22nd. Describe this two-man show for us. We come in, sit down, and, okay, take it, Colin.
We like to say it's a live version of Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Okay.
Without the dead weight. basically everybody else. So everything starts with a suggestion from the audience. We have audience in scenes with us for about 60% of the show. It's just fast, goofy, wild stuff for 2 hours. It's more interactive than the TV show. It's just a lot of fun. And it's fun for us. I mean, we've been doing this 22 years. It's the thing we most enjoy doing in our lives. Because every show is like an opening and closing. No one else will see that show except for that audience for that night. So it makes it fun. We never have to do our greatest hits over and over again, like a super band. Yeah. So it's just so much fun. And especially when we came back after the pandemic, it was just so exciting. You could feel how excited everybody was first to be out again, and also just to be part of a live entertainment experience. It was really, really cool.
Oh, phenomenal. The tagline on the announcement, two men, no script, no problem. Whose line was that? Anyway, see what I did there?
Yeah, I did. It was probably Brad. Brad's sort of the marketing guy.
Okay.
He comes up with all the pithy things. I just had him up with titles.
Beautiful.
And
okay.
He's the perfect person to be on tour with because he's obsessed with details, whereas I couldn't care less. So he takes care of all the things that make our tour go well and work out nicely for us. And I just make sure he doesn't have a stroke.
For that, you share the bill.
Exactly.
Okay, so I don't really need to ask how long this has been development, because really this is what you've been doing anyway. And I guess, were you already touring this while Whose Line Is It Anyway was on the air? Were you doing this during the, quote, off-season anyway?
Yeah, we started during the Drew seasons, yeah. We thought, hey, well, why don't we give it a try? The show's got some traction. Let's try it out. And it worked out for us.
Okay. You said it's pretty much a live version of Whose Line Is It Anyway. Do you have that type of setup as well, with one person serving as, again, for lack of a better word, moderator, throwing out the suggestions, or is it really one of you just saying, hey, audience member?
It kind of goes back to our early days where we're kind of in charge. Every once in a while we have audience members come up and they sort of take a Drew role in some way. But yeah, we do like the sound effect scene that we have in Whose Line. We've had to sort of adapt some games or just invent new ones just because it is just the two of us. Hmm. And I always think, okay, now that's all we can make up now because there's no other way to do this. And then we come up with three new games. So it fascinates me that we're still finding ways of coming up with new games and making it new and exciting for us.
Can you give me, for example, can you describe what people see with one of these new scenarios?
Yeah. Recently we came up with one. You know, we were talking about how we tour and we never get to see the town that we're touring. Mm. You know, we come in the day of, do a sound check, we do the show, and then we leave the next day. So we get the audience to talk about the town, the positives, the negatives, famous people that come from there, historical events. And then we do a Broadway musical about it. And I have to say, this is with one person who can actually sing in the cast. So it makes it exciting.
So Brad Sherwood is the singer on this. Well, let me see.
Oh, I sing too.
Oh, yeah?
Just my best songs are shorter.
When you're doing improv shows like this, or even on Whose Line Is It Anyway, you know, while it is truly improvisational, and you never really know what's going to come up as far as what you'll be tasked with doing, have you ever had conversations with your improv partner beforehand talking about what would be funny to do if such and such scenario gets presented?
No, because most of the actual work we do in the show is coming up with ways of asking for suggestions so we don't get something that we can plan for. We had one, we just asked, what's the weirdest actual job that someone in your actual family has? And this woman told us about her cousin, whose job it is, he's the person you call when you're trapped in an elevator.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, that is a job I'd never actually have thought of at all, ever. But that made it exciting for us because that's something we've never had. So we're not getting joke answers. We're actually getting something that is unusual and weird.
So how did this one end up? I'm imagining almost a spy or the super detective cop kind of thing where they answered the call. Yes, somebody's stuck in an elevator. I'll be right there.
Yeah, it became sort of a crisis call. And it was also a game in which we had audience members every once in a while supply what the next line in the scene was.
Mm.
So we're going, you know, okay, I want you to remain calm and just slowly say to yourself, my underwear is riding up, as I could say. So it just made it weird, and then we would have to justify. It's so much fun.
Incredible. So with suggestions from the audience, and again, this is so all over the place, anything that you really love when people suggest, you know, it's your comfort zone when people throw out, okay, bench warmer at a basketball game, or the old classic, I don't know why, is pantyhose salesman at a bus stop. I don't know why that became the classic go-to for improv.
I don't know either. We always tried in Second City. One of the things we were told, never do a improv scene at a bowling alley or in heaven. So, of course, we would spend way too much time. We had like a bowling alley in heaven.
Yes.
And for some reason, those never worked. We never actually made it so that it worked.
Mm.
It's always the things where you go, well, this isn't going to work. And then for whatever reason, a magic wand hits you and everything that you say becomes amazing and it leads to somewhere new. Again, it's just living in the moment and being ready for anything that comes your way.
Gotcha. That's a beautiful wrap right there. I do have one follow-up, partially based on what you just said. I wonder if you could recall when someone had some sort of suggestion, be it the audience or be it Drew Carey again, you know, Wayne Brady Whisper, you know, anything. You get a suggestion, and at first you're thinking, oh my God, how can I do this? I'm going to go flat. And then it turns into one of the bits that just gets eaten up the most. The audience loves it.
Oh, okay. This was during Whose Line, and it was one that Richard Simmons was on. And we were doing the scene where Richard and Wayne were playing different objects, and we would use them in the scene. So Ryan and I were doing this sort of game within the game where we're trying to trip up the other person. And it's a fine line. You don't want to derail the scene, but it's just making the other person do something a little outside of their comfort zone. So I made him use Richard as a deck chair. And then he said, all right, let's go jet skiing. There's yours. So I had to use Richard as a jet ski. Now, he was lying face down on the floor. And I thought, oh, well, I can't pick up his arms because that'll hurt his back. So I turned him around and picked him up, not really thinking. His head was now at my crotch. And I started doing the jet ski. And so we're bobbing in the ocean. And it had a look that was not, well, anyway. the audience went insane. It was like, for two straight minutes, I had Richard Simmons' head bobbing at my crotch. I'd never felt so helpless. I was trying to keep concentrating, but I thought, my God, what? Where do we go from here? And it became this classic scene. And kudos to Richard Simmons, because from the very beginning, he was totally committed and into doing anything we wanted to do. And it's one of those scenes that people don't know the show. Their friends show him that scene and say, this is what Whose Line's all about.
Nice. Wow. Any bits that just never get old. And so, again, although it's improvisational, there are certain things or actions which you just know somebody will call out. Anything that never gets old that you have actually repeated?
Yeah, I always loved doing greatest hits with Ryan on the show, because it was, in one way, I mean, it wasn't scripted, but we knew we were going to banter. Then we'd throw it over to those guys, they'd sing, then we'd banter. So I always knew what was coming, and then with the suggestion that would sort of temper or color what we were about to do. But I always knew it was going to be the two of us. I would end up getting really angry with him for some reason, and he'd be going incredibly stupid for the whole thing. We had these kind of characters. I was the angry one, he was the dumb one, and then I enjoyed that, because that was sort of the one sort of regular characters that we did, even though it was never mentioned or used their own names, but we had these kind of characters selling musical CDs, and I always looked forward to it. I knew it was going to be fun. Then I would have the added pleasure of watching those guys sing ridiculous titles or songs we come up with.
Beautiful. That's really fun. Colin, thank you so much for this. This is great fun for me, between theater and comedy and improv. You know, I learned a lot. I was entertained at the same time, and I hope to be able to catch you guys. Thank you for your time.
If you do, come back and say hi.
Absolutely. Colin, thank you again.
Thanks, David.
For this edition of KVC Arts, I've been speaking with Colin Mockrey with a brand new two-person show with Brad Sherwood at Agua Caliente Resort and Casino June 22nd. More at aguacalientecasinos.com, as well as colinandbradshow.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Colin, as well as Jeff Abraham with Jonas Public Relations. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Tony Lopez, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, be sure to check out our calendar of events at our homepage. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts. Behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.